Last week we began a new series to start 2016 where we're going to be looking at the Old Testament book of Daniel. So if you have a Bible with you, you can open up to Daniel chapter 1. That is where we're going to be studying this morning, Daniel chapter 1. If you don't have a Bible, we'll put all the scriptures up on the screens for you. But as you're turning there, let me remind you of some things that we learned about Daniel last week. The book was written in the 6th century BC by a guy named Daniel who was living in the city of Jerusalem at the rise of the Babylonian Empire under King Nebuchadnezzar. The very first verse of Daniel says this: "In the 3rd year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it." Not only did King Nebuchadnezzar besiege Jerusalem, but he took with him whatever spoils of his victory that he wanted, including people. Over the course of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, he took captive over 50,000 people from Israel and deported them to the city of Babylon. And the people that he took were the best and the brightest. They were the ones who were smart and skilled. They were the ones who were from the families of nobility and royalty. And in the very first group that Nebuchadnezzar took from Jerusalem to Babylon, this group was young, teenagers even. And among this group was Daniel and his companions, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So try and imagine the situation that these young men are facing. One moment, they're living in Jerusalem, a place that is comfortable and familiar, a place where everybody sees the world as they do, has the same values as they do, shares the same faith that they do, and worships the same God that they do. In Jerusalem, they are the majority. And then all of a sudden, they find themselves in a world of Babylon, where society around them doesn't view the world that they do. They don't hold the values that they hold. They don't share the faith that they have, and they don't worship the same God that they worship. In the new world, Daniel and his companions, they are the minority. And the question that Daniel is faced with in the middle of this new world is this: how do you remain faithful to God in a world that rejects him? Now, you and I, we don't live in Babylon. We weren't taken captive from our homes and deported to a foreign city like Daniel was. But in the same way that Daniel finds himself in a world that does not share his values or his faith or worship his God, in that regard, maybe we can relate to Daniel in a small way. Because the questions that Daniel faced in Babylon are also the questions that we face in our lives today. How do we remain faithful to God in a world that rejects him? How do we live for God in an environment that's hostile to him? These are the questions that put every single one of us into the story of Daniel. And in this series, as we study this book together, Daniel is going to help us begin to answer some of these questions in our own lives. Now, last week, we learned that God sent a prophet named Jeremiah to go to these captives who were in Babylon. And it was to these captives in Babylon that this famous verse was written, Jeremiah 29:11. "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans for welfare and not for evil, to give you a future and a hope." We love this verse, right? This is the one that we post on Facebook. This is the one that we have on coffee mugs. I brought my Jeremiah 29:11 coffee mug with me. The reason that we're drawn to this verse, the reason that we remind ourselves on coffee mugs about this verse, is because this verse is comforting, isn't it? Isn't it comforting to know that God has a plan, a good plan, for a future and a hope? But sometimes we confuse this comforting verse to mean that God's plans for us are that we be comfortable. We want this verse to mean that God's plans for our future means that he's going to remove all the uncomfortable, all the unwanted, and all the uncertain parts of our lives. But this verse was written to a group of people who were just informed by God that his plan for them included living in Babylon for 70 years. Now, that is not comfortable. And if these guys are anything like you and me, then whenever we get uncomfortable, we get out. Our immediate reaction when we find ourselves in an uncomfortable environment is to remove ourselves, right? If we're not comfortable with what's happening in the world around us that doesn't share our values or our faith or worship our God, what we tend to do is this: we separate ourselves into groups of people who are just like us, who think like us, who act like us, who believe like us, Because we are more comfortable around people like us than we are around people like them, whoever them may be. So we remove, we separate, and we isolate. And though this might help us feel a little less uncomfortable, we end up being unengaged from the world around us. And being unengaged was not part of God's plan for living in Babylon. God instructed the captives while they're in Babylon. He says, here's your mission. While you're in Babylon, you are supposed to love Babylon. You are to seek the welfare of Babylon. You are to pray for Babylon with the same energy that you do all of these things for yourselves. God has a plan even in places like Babylon, so be engaged with the world around you. Now that's what we learned last week. But maybe some of you left last week wondering the same question that I was. How engaged are we supposed to get, right? You ever think about that? How involved in this world am I supposed to be? Well, Daniel speaks to this in the rest of chapter 1. He sets the stage in verse 3. Daniel says, then the king commanded Ashpenaz, his chief eunuch, to bring some of the people of Israel to teach them the literature and the language of the Chaldeans. The king assigned them a daily portion of the food that the king ate and of the wine that he drank. They were to be educated for 3 years, and at the end of that time, they were to stand before the king. Among these were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah of the tribe of Judah. And the chief of the eunuchs gave them names. Daniel he called Belteshazzar, Hananiah he called Shadrach, Mishael he called Meshach, and Azariah he called Abednego. So, can you see what King Nebuchadnezzar is trying to do? Can you see what he's doing? His plan is to take these young people, like Daniel and his buddies, and to get them super engaged in the world of Babylon. His plan is to get them enrolled in all the Babylonian schools, teach them the Babylonian literature, feed them the Babylonian food, and expose them in every way possible to the Babylonian way of life. And not just ordinary Babylonian life, but life fit for a king. They ate the king's food, they drank the king's wine, they hung out in the king's court. Now all of a sudden, these teenage young men have more access and opportunity than probably any other time in their entire lives, and there are no parents around. You remember what it was like that moment you got your first taste of life on your own? Maybe it was your first semester at college, maybe it was your first apartment, or moving away for your first job, but all of a sudden, you found yourself surrounded with access and opportunity that you never had before. I was never allowed to do this, and now I can. I have never experienced this, and now it's right here in front of me. Where I come from, nobody did this, but here, everybody is doing it. In Babylon, Daniel and his companions found themselves in an environment where the things that were accessible and acceptable were far different than what they were used to. And I bet you there were some of these exiles, especially the young ones, who rather than being repulsed by Babylon, they were enticed. Because it seems as though King Nebuchadnezzar didn't want them to hate Babylon. He wanted them to love it. He wanted them to love it so much that eventually they would become it. Last week we saw that on one end, the temptation is to completely separate ourselves and then become unengaged from the world around us. But then on the other end, there's a temptation to completely immerse themselves and become indistinguishable from the world around them. Do you see the difference? Now maybe you know what it feels like to be repulsed by the world around you. It tempts you to separate yourself. But do you know what it feels like to be enticed by the world around you? To find yourself in an environment where things are accessible and acceptable. Not only do you have access to new ideas, new experiences, and new things, but they are all culturally acceptable. Everybody's doing it. Everybody's okay with it. In fact, everybody is encouraging it. Have you ever found yourself in a situation like this, where everyone around you is so accepting of what's going on that the only one who is ever going to stop you from completely indulging in everything is you, that's a different kind of temptation, isn't it? Rather than seeing the world around you and wanting to separate from it, you see the world around you and you're tempted to be absorbed by it, to become indistinguishable. Have you ever felt that temptation before? You see what's happening in the world around you, and there's this teeny tiny voice in the back of your head that for a split second speaks up and says, "Man, I became a Christian too early. Look how much fun they're having." I think Daniel and his companions found themselves in this exact environment. The world around them is tempting them to become so engaged that they become exactly like it, that they would be indistinguishable from the world around them. So, how do you remain faithful to God in a world like this? Will we influence Babylon, or will Babylon influence us? Let me read you the rest of chapter 1, and then we'll talk about it. Verse 8 says, "But Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food or with the wine that he drank. Therefore, he asked the chief of the eunuchs to allow him not to defile himself, and God gave Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the chief of the eunuchs. And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, 'I fear my lord the king, who assigned you your food and drink. For why should he see that you were in worse condition than the youths who were of your own age? So you would endanger my head with the king.' Then Daniel said to the steward, whom the chief of the eunuchs had assigned over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, 'Test your servants for 10 days. Let us be given vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance and the appearance of the youths who eat the king's food be observed by you, and deal with your servants according to what you see.' So he listened to them in this matter and tested them for 10 days. At the end of the 10 days, it was seen that they were better in appearance and fatter in flesh than all the youths who ate the king's food. So the steward took away their food and the wine they were to drink and gave them vegetables. As for these four youths, God gave them learning and skill in all literature and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. At the end of the time, when the king had commanded that they should be brought in, the chief of the eunuchs brought them in before King Nebuchadnezzar. And the king spoke with them, and among all of them, none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore, they stood before the king, and in every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters that were in all of his kingdom." So what is the point of Daniel chapter 1? Eat your vegetables. You can read that to your kids at dinner. Let's go back to verse 8. Verse 8 says, "But Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food or with the wine that he drank." Do you see here that there came a point for Daniel and his companions where they decided that they could not engage any longer with what is happening around them? You see that? Even though the king's food was accessible to them, and even though eating it was acceptable by everybody around them, they resolved that they would not indulge in it. Right? Now let me go ahead and pull a principle from this one verse right here. Just because you can do it doesn't mean that you should. You could write that one down and use it, because you might need to be reminded of that, especially in the world that we live in. Because in our world, like Daniel's, there are a whole lot of things that are accessible and acceptable. But that doesn't mean that those things are responsible or sensible or even faithful. Am I right? Just because you can do it doesn't mean that you should. And the world that we live in, we're hearing the exact opposite of this. The world around us tells us things like, if it feels good, do it. If it makes you happy, then it can't be that bad. Follow your hearts and everything will work out. And sometimes this message can be packaged in religious sounding language. Maybe you've heard this phrase before. When God closes a door, he opens a window. I always thought that phrase was weird, because unless there's an emergency or something, climbing through a window looks a lot like breaking and entering, doesn't it? Just because you can do it doesn't mean that you should. And Daniel says, even though we can eat the food, we choose not to. But why? Why the food? Why did Daniel and his friends choose this to be the thing that they would not indulge in? Let me just tell you up front. I wrestled with this part of the passage all week. Before I started studying it closer, I simply thought that there must be something with the king's food that violated one of the Jewish laws or something. Because have you read the book of Leviticus? You see how many laws that they have about food and things? So I just thought that there was something here that violated one of their laws, and by not eating the food, Daniel was being a good rule follower. And I get that, because I'm a firstborn child. I'm a natural-born rule follower. So I thought, man, this sermon is going to be easy. I'm going to do a little research. I'm going to find out what the rule was that Daniel didn't want to break. I'm going to find a modern-day equivalent of that rule. I'm going to tell you guys to not do that, and then we're going to be done. We can go watch football. Well, here's what I found instead. In all the books, in all the commentaries, in all the articles that I read, nobody knows for sure why Daniel chose not to eat this food. For every theory, there is also a counter-argument. Well, maybe he didn't eat the food because it broke one of the Jewish food laws. Well, then why didn't he drink the wine? Because drinking the wine wasn't against the Jewish food laws. Well, maybe he didn't eat the food because it was sacrificed to idols in Babylon. Then why did he eat the vegetables? Because those came from the same place and would have been offered to the same gods of Babylon. Well, maybe he didn't eat the food because he was protesting. Accepting the food would symbolize a relationship between Daniel and the king that he did not want to promote. But why was Daniel willing to accept the other things from the king? Like a job, like an education, like a new name, like a place in the court. Daniel didn't take a stand in any of those places. And besides, Daniel's protest was private. Only a few people knew about it, and the king wasn't even one of them. So why the food? Do you see the confusion? Here's the best explanation I could come up with for this. For Daniel and his friends, abstaining from the food was a personal declaration of their allegiance to God. You see, they're living in a world where their minds as well as their bodies are being fed the Babylonian way of life. Every single day, the world around them is trying to absorb them and make them indistinguishable from everybody else. In Babylon, everything is accessible and everything is acceptable, and the only ones who are ever going to stop them from completely being absorbed are themselves. The word defile here, it means to be corrupted. And the word corruption means to change something from its original form. For Daniel, this was far more than eating food and following rules. It was about not being changed by the world around him. The world around him was threatening to change him, to defile him, to absorb him. But Daniel says, I will not let myself be unengaged from the world around me, so I'm not going to separate from everything. But at the same time, I'm not going to let myself be indistinguishable from the world around me, so I will abstain from some things. Look at what Jesus says in Matthew about being defiled. Jesus says, it's not what goes into the mouth that defiles a person, but what comes out of the mouth, this defiles a person. What comes out of the mouth proceeds from the heart, and this defiles person. Do you see that being defiled is a heart issue? I think the reason that Daniel didn't eat the food was not because he was following the rules. It was because he was guarding his heart. Babylon wanted to absorb everything about him, including his heart. So eating the vegetables was not a food issue. It was a heart issue. For Daniel, every disgusting bite of cauliflower was a declaration. You may have my name, Babylon. You may have my education, Babylon. You may have my job, my clothes, and my money, Babylon, but you can't have my heart. That belongs to God. I will not be defiled. I will be engaged, but I will not be changed. Do you see that? So how do you remain faithful to God in a world that rejects him? You eat your vegetables. We all live in a world that's trying to absorb everything about us, including our hearts. And the only way for us to keep that from happening is to be resolved. Resolved means a settled determination. Resolve implies being intentional and deliberate. Daniel's resolve was this: in order to keep my heart directed to God, I will not eat the king's food. I will eat vegetables instead. So what about you and me? What does our resolve look like? In the world that you and I live in, what are the things that we need to do or not to do in order to keep our hearts directed on God? For Daniel, it was to refuse the king's food. But for you and for me, it could look very different, because every one of our lives is very different. Maybe the reason that Daniel doesn't tell us exactly why he refused the food is because he knows us. He knows that what we would do is we would make it into a rule to follow. And the thing about rules is, you can follow a rule without your heart being in it. But without your heart being in it, you cannot follow God. You'll get absorbed by whatever it is that your heart is chasing after. So in order to protect our hearts, we need to separate ourselves, not from everything in this world, but we need to definitely separate ourselves from some things, especially the things that threaten to turn our hearts away from God. So what is it in your life and mine that for the sake of our hearts, we need to not do? Maybe it's an activity that you need to stop. Maybe it's an environment that you need to get out of. Maybe it's a person that you need to spend less time with. Maybe there's some inappropriate conversations or gossip or slander that you need to not participate in anymore. Maybe there's something that you're being asked to do that you need to refuse. Whatever it may be, for the sake of our hearts, we need to be resolved, like Daniel, to eat our vegetables. Do you understand what I'm saying? Now maybe you've realized that we're 20 minutes in, and there's still 13 verses left in this chapter, and you're thinking to yourself, man, the little pastor's going to keep us here all day. Let me quickly make one observation about the rest of this chapter, and I'll summarize it with this question. How does your approach affect your influence? I think it's interesting that there's only one verse here that talks about why Daniel did what he did. But there's 13 verses that talk about how he did it. And how Daniel refused the king's food is very informative. Because what we see about Daniel is that Daniel was able to take a stand for his faith and maintain influence in the world around him at the same time. In fact, what we come to learn about Daniel as we read through the book is that Daniel, the exiled slave from Jerusalem, ends up becoming the personal advisor to the most powerful king in the whole world. Take a look at what it says in the next verse. Therefore, Daniel asked the chief of the eunuchs to allow him to not defile himself, and God gave Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the chief of the eunuchs. Notice the phrase "God gave" here. This is a buzzword in the book of Daniel, showing that no matter what is happening, God is still in control. When Nebuchadnezzar conquered Jerusalem, Daniel wrote, "God gave Jerusalem into his hands." This phrase, "God gave," it points to the plans of God in every situation, including places like Babylon. So right here, as Daniel is making a stand for his faith, God has plans to use that for God's purposes. We see this little phrase again when they stand before the king. It says that these four youths, God gave them learning and skill in all literature and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. And in every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king inquired of them, the king found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters that were in all of his kingdom. Do you see how God had a plan to use their faithfulness? Do you see how standing in front of the king, they found themselves in a place of influence? Do you see that? God did that. Now you and I, we don't stand in front of kings, but God has placed every single one of us in places of influence. Whether you know it or not, you have influence with your families, with your friends, with your coworkers, even with the people around you who you don't even realize are watching you. You have influence, and God did that. The question is, how are you going to handle that influence? Because the way in which we handle ourselves can have an effect on our influence of others. And Daniel shows us that it is possible to take a stand for your faith while maintaining your influence at the same time. I want you to take a look at two words that jumped out at me about Daniel while he was taking the stand for his faith. It says, favor and compassion. That's the two words. It says, the Babylonians who were in charge of Daniel, they had favor and compassion of him. That means that they ended up liking him and caring for his well-being. Do you see that? Isn't that what compassion and favor mean? That they did that to him? So here's the reality of the situation. It seems that Daniel carried himself in such a way among the Babylonians that people who were nothing like him liked him. Do you see that? Now, some of you might look at me like, but wait a minute, Dusty. It says right here that God made them like him. Well, that may be true. But for some of us, the way that we conduct ourselves around people who are not like us, it would have to be an act of God himself for them to actually like us. Because sometimes the way in which we handle ourselves, sometimes the way in which we talk about other people, sometimes the way in which we post on Facebook, sometimes the way in which we take a stand for our faith, sometimes we do it in such a way where we destroy our influence. People look at how we handle ourselves and how we treat other people, and they say, if their God is anything like them, then I don't want to have anything to do with it. Do you see how our approach can affect our influence? Daniel carried himself in such a way that even while he was taking a stand for his faith, he didn't needlessly hurt the people around him or destroy the influence that God had placed in his life. Daniel carried himself in such a way that even people who were not like him liked him. And he wasn't selling out. And he wasn't watering anything down. He was being mindful of his approach and how it affected his influence. Because you never know how God might plan to use your influence for his purposes. In the book of Acts, chapter 16, the Apostle Paul finds himself in jail again for preaching about Jesus in a world that rejects him. But look at the unexpected way that God uses his position for influence. It says, about midnight, Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns to God, and the prisoners were listening to them, and suddenly there was a great earthquake, so that the foundations of the prison were shaken, and immediately all the doors were opened, and everyone's bonds were unfastened. When the jailer woke and saw that the prison doors were open, he drew his sword and was about to kill himself, supposing that the prisoners had escaped. But Paul cried with a loud voice, "Do not harm yourself, for we are all here." And the jailer called for lights and rushed in, and trembling with fear, he fell down before Paul and Silas. Then he brought them out and said, "Sirs, what must I do to be saved?" And they said, "Believe in the Lord Jesus, and you will be saved, you and your household." And he rejoiced, along with his entire household, that he had believed in God. God has plans to use our influence in the world around us for his purposes. So be careful how your approach affects your influence. So how do you remain faithful to God in the world that rejects him? Like Daniel, we live within the tension of these two extremes. We will not separate ourselves from everything in the world and become unengaged, but we will need to separate ourselves from some things so we don't end up indistinguishable. And as we wrestle with the balance of what this looks like in each one of our lives, we do so knowing that God has a plan, even in places like Babylon, to use our faithfulness to influence this world for him. You see that this morning? Will you stand with me as I pray for us? God, we thank you that you are a God who has plans. Even when it looks like, from our perspective, everything is falling apart and chaotic. God, we are thankful that your plans exist even in the parts of our lives that seem like darkness and captivity. Places like Babylon. God, I pray that you would give us a new perspective from the book of Daniel. That we would not see ourselves as people who have been taken away from something, but see ourselves as people who've been sent specifically to this place at this time for God's purposes. And God, I pray that you would help us as we live life in the world around us, that we would be the kind of people like these exiles in Babylon who wrestle every day with what it looks like to balance between not separating ourselves from the whole world and being unengaged, but at the same time, not being so immersed in the world that we are indistinguishable. God, I pray that you would individually, in our unique life experiences, show us what it looks like for us to live between this balance. Maybe this week, God, you could help us to see what the vegetables in our lives need to be. What are the things that we need to stop doing or not participate in that keep our hearts from turning to anything other than you? And God, I pray that you would begin to do that in our lives this week, ultimately for your purpose. Not that we live a comfortable life, but that we live a life that you can use to influence the world around us. God, we submit ourselves to your plans because it's your plans that saved us. That you loved us so much that you had a plan that even while we were still sinners and rebelling from you, you sent us Jesus to die in our place for our sins so that we would be forgiven of them and have new life in you. That is where our future and our hope come from, all in Jesus. We pray all this in his name. Amen.